being an independent woman and all of a sudden entering to the situation where they have to be dependent to the male family members.
For Afghan women, U.S. departure marks new era of uncertainty. It's Tuesday, September 7th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Amy Heibels in Washington. You can also find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Afghans face internal displacement crisis. And remembering 9/11, what does 9/11 mean to young New Yorkers? Limiting presidential war-making powers. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The Taliban said on Monday they've taken control of Panjshir province north of Kabul, the last holdout of anti-Taliban forces in the country, and the only province the Taliban had not taken control of in Afghanistan last month. Meanwhile, in an audio message on his Facebook page, resistance leader Ahmad Massoud said his forces are still present in Panjshir and will continue to fight the Taliban. On Saturday, Taliban fighters in Kabul forcefully broke up a protest by a group of women demanding equal participation in the government. The Taliban imposed a brutal justice system and banned women from work and prevented older girls from receiving an education when the group previously seized power. Taliban leaders, however, have promised to install an inclusive government in Kabul that they say will allow women to work and receive an education within the framework of Islamic law or Sharia. As VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports, there are already signs that their rights are in danger.
Taliban fighters celebrated with gunfire and swooped into the Kabul airport as the last U.S. service members left Afghanistan. For Afghan women, the U.S. departure marks a new era of uncertainty and fears of what lies ahead. The Taliban have promised women certain rights under the framework of Islam. However, basic rights like going to school or work could soon be taken away. In the western city of Herat, Afghan women staged a defiant protest, demanding the right to work and representation in the Taliban's new government. Lena Haidari is a government school teacher.
I want to say that I was forced to stay at home for the crime of being a student 20 years ago, and now, 20 years later, for the crime of being a teacher and a woman.
State Department spokesperson Ned Price had this to say.
What we will be looking to when it comes to the issues that you've raised, including the potential for any forms of assistance, will be the actions of any new Afghan government, especially vis-a-vis the areas we care profoundly about. That is safe passage, respect for the rights of the people of Afghanistan, including women and girls and minorities, a government that is inclusive.
U.S. Senator Jean Shaheen told a Washington Post forum that the Doha Agreement, negotiated between the Trump administration and the Taliban in 2020, provided no guarantees of an inclusive government or protections for the rights of women. Democratic United States Senator Jean Shaheen.
I raised concerns with former Secretary Pompeo, with Ambassador Khalilzad, that women were not represented at the table, despite the fact that we have legislation on the books signed by former President Trump that says in conflict areas, women should be at the negotiating table when we are negotiating the end to the dispute. And those messages fell on deaf ears. So now we are dealing with a situation where women and girls were not represented at the table, and there are no assurances for them going forward.
A former Afghan judge living in exile told that same forum what she is hearing from women activists still in Afghanistan.
They are depressed, they are helpless, they cannot help themselves, not only themselves, but also they become dependent. That's also a kind of a way of how they see themselves being an independent woman and all of a sudden entering to the situation where they have to be dependent to the male family members.
Many fear the Taliban will return to the brutal way they ruled the country from 1996 until the U.S. drove them out in 2001. Tara DeMont is with Amnesty International USA.
They banned almost all education for women and girls. They imposed punishments, including stoning and lashings. And they confined women to their homes unless they were accompanied by a male escort. And there's a real fear that this type of repression or versions of this could come back.
The very real threats to the lives of Afghan women activists demand action by the Biden administration. Tara DeMont of Amnesty International tells VOA.
For some Afghan women, for some Afghan women's rights defenders, safety is going to look like a refugee, being a refugee and being an asylum seeker in the United States or in other countries.
For now, many Afghan women are left to stay and fight for their rights. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
You can learn more about our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Curtain divides male-female students as Afghan universities reopen. Taliban pledge safety for humanitarian workers, UN says. Taliban stopped planes of evacuees from leaving, but unclear why. Hundreds of thousands of Indian farmers rally against farm laws. China turns to rap to promote policies at home and abroad. For additional coverage of these stories and more, go to Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. The UN Refugee Agency warns millions of Afghans displaced by conflict inside their country are teetering on the brink of a humanitarian catastrophe and need international aid to survive. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
An estimated 3.5 million Afghans have been uprooted by conflict and insecurity, including more than 500,000 newly displaced people this year. Women and children account for most of the internally displaced people. The UN Refugee Agency has predicted about 500,000 Afghans will likely flee to neighboring countries in search of asylum. However, UN observers at Pakistani and Iranian border points report that a large-scale refugee influx so far has not materialized. Speaking on a video link from the Pakistan capital, Islamabad, UNHCR spokesman Baba Baluch says his agency is trying to analyze why so few people are coming.
There could be many, many reasons, but the reality is the displacement crisis is inside Afghanistan.
Baluch says the border between Pakistan and Afghanistan remains open to commercial trade between the two countries. He says a limited number of Afghan pedestrians cross every day. That flow, he says, is very regulated and managed at the border. Baluch says it is crucial Afghanistan not become a forgotten crisis. He says the UNHCR is appealing to the world not to turn its attention away from the Afghan people. He says international support is needed to keep the Afghan people from leaving home. He appeals to the international community not to allow Afghanistan's internal displacement crisis to become a humanitarian catastrophe. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Happening now in Asia, Vietnam's capital, Hanoi, on Monday extended COVID-19 restrictions for another 2 weeks as authorities launched a plan to test up to 1.5 million people for the infection in higher-risk areas amid a climb in cases. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. All this week, VOA Asia remembers the events and effects of 9/11 as it approaches the 20th anniversary on Saturday of the terror attack on the United States. They were too young to remember the 9/11 attacks or were born in the years after, but they all grew up in a city coping with the aftermath. What does 9/11 mean to New York City's young adults and teenagers? VOA's Tina Trin has more.
Noah Rodriguez was only 2 at the time, but he thinks about 9/11 as the day the earth stood still, everyone watching as the Twin Towers burned.
And that was important because there's a level of humility to that. And I don't think that's going to be forgotten as much.
The attacks on the World Trade Center undoubtedly changed New York City, but for those who were children during 9/11 or born shortly thereafter, there's some ambivalence as the 20th anniversary approaches.
I think most kids, like, they understand conceptually what happened and they can understand that it was a tragedy, but it's not the same thing as living through it.
For 16-year-old New Yorker Sarah Malik, 9/11 is a secondhand experience, one told to her by her dad, who worked near the Twin Towers.
Many of them don't know. It's not that they know, but they don't care.
Joan Mastropolo of the 9/11 Tribute Museum says the events and their aftermath can become real for younger generations when they hear the stories of survivors. For 17-year-old Silvana Davi, the day is personal. Her mother was supposed to be in the Twin Towers when the plane struck.
If my mom did go, I wouldn't be here.
Growing up in a New York suburb where many lost parents, the attack has been a backdrop to her life. She recently wrote a paper about it for her history class.
I feel like it should never be forgotten, and the new generations that are coming in should learn about it.
She's also raising money for a 9/11-related charity. As the country marks the 20th anniversary, future generations will define for themselves what 9/11 means to them.
America is burning in a lot of different ways. Like, I don't know why people have been so focused on this in the grand scheme of things.
Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
Now on VOA Asia, one of the lasting legacies of the September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks may finally be repealed by U.S. lawmakers seeking to limit presidential war-making powers. The 2001 and 2002 authorizations for the use of military force for the war on terror have been a subject of heated debate on Capitol Hill almost since they were passed. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more.
U.S. forces attacked while evacuating Americans and Afghan allies out of Kabul, bringing the U.S. involvement in Afghanistan to a close nearly two decades after the U.S. Congress gave the White House the power to wage war there. Authorizations that also covered the conflict in Iraq and then stretched to include engagements ranging from Syria to Yemen to the strike against Iranian General Qasem Soleimani.
Over 20 years, successive administrations have interpreted and reinterpreted the text of that resolution to use it in new countries against an expanding list of loosely connected groups. This process has all but cut Congress out of its fundamental responsibility to decide issues of war and peace.
Under the U.S. Constitution, Congress has the power to declare war, but the 2001 and 2002 authorizations of use of military force gave U.S. presidents broad powers to engage overseas.
Presidents increasingly go it alone and tell Congress the bare minimum about military actions. Presidents and their lawyers look to a 20-year-old authorization of force to justify their actions. If we do nothing, we shouldn't be surprised by the outcome.
Earlier this year, before the evacuation of Kabul, the White House signaled it was willing to work with Congress to repeal those authorizations in favor of a narrower framework.
They should include concrete consequences, like a funding cutoff with a shorter clock.
Past efforts to repeal the authorizations have met with opposition from presidents on both sides of the aisle, as well as Republican criticism it could hamper the U.S. response to terrorist threats.
We have the same goal here. We may have just a little bit different means of getting about it. We should also avoid dismissive talk of forever wars because it implies that our ongoing counterterrorism engagements are illegal and unnecessary.
As a senator, Biden worked for greater congressional oversight over presidential war powers. Now that he's in the White House, there is a sense Congress can reassert control over one of its most important responsibilities.
There is a fundamental question of leveling with the American public and holding the president accountable for the justification that he or she proposes to provide.
A key Senate committee approved the repeals earlier this summer, clearing the way for a full floor vote when the Senate returns in September. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Don't forget to like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. You can also follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can find us on Instagram and YouTube and at voanews.com. Thank you for stopping by, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, Chris Cascale, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Amy Heibels in Washington. Please stay safe and make it a great day.